from book one, The Boy and the Goddess.
Tell me about a complicated man. Muse, tell me how he wandered and was lost when he had wrecked the holy town of Troy, and where he went and who he met, the pain he suffered on the sea, and how he worked to save life and bring his men back home. He failed, and for their own mistakes, they died. They ate the sun god's cattle, and the god kept them from home. Now, goddess, child of Zeus, tell the old story for our modern times. Find the beginning. All the other Greeks who had survived the brutal sack of Troy sailed safely home to their own wives, except this man alone. Calypso, a great goddess, had trapped him in her cave. She wanted him to be her husband. When the year rolled round in which the gods decreed he should go home to Ithaca, his troubles still went on. The man was friendless. All the gods took pity, except Poseidon's anger never ended until Odysseus was back at home. But now, the distant Ethiopians, who lived between the sunset and the dawn, were worshiping the sea god with a feast, 100 cattle and 100 rams. There sat the god, delighting at his banquet. The other gods were gathered on Olympus, his father Zeus's palace. He was thinking of fine, well-born Aegisthus, who was killed by Agamemnon's famous son Orestes. He told the deathless gods, "This is absurd that mortals blame the gods. They say we cause their suffering, but they themselves increase it by folly." So Aegisthus overstepped. He took the legal wife of Agamemnon, then killed the husband when he came back home, although he knew that it would doom them all. We gods had warned Aegisthus. We sent down perceptive Hermes, who flashed into sight and told him not to murder Agamemnon or court his wife. Orestes would grow up and come back to his home to take revenge. Aegisthus would not hear that good advice, but now his death has paid all debts. Athena looked at him steadily and answered, "Father, he did deserve to die. Bring death to all who act like him, but I am agonizing about Odysseus and his bad luck. For too long he has suffered, with no friends. Sea all around him, sea on every side, out on an island where a goddess lives, daughter of the fearful Atlas, who holds up the pillars of the sea and knows its depths. Those pillars keep the heaven and earth apart. His daughter holds that poor unhappy man and tries to beguile him with gentle words to cease his thoughts of Ithaca. But he longs to see even just the smoke that rises from his own homeland, and he wants to die." "You do not even care, Olympian. Remember how he is sacrificed to you on the broad plain of Troy beside his ships? So why do you dismiss Odysseus?" "Daughter," the cloud god said, "you must be joking, since how could I forget Odysseus? He is more sensible than other humans and makes more sacrifices to the gods. But Lord Poseidon rages, unrelenting, because Odysseus destroyed the eye of godlike Polymephus, his own son. The strongest of the Cyclops, whose mother is a sea nymph, child of Phorcys, the sea king, and she lay beside Poseidon inside a hollow cave. The lord of earthquakes prevents Odysseus from reaching home, but does not kill him. Come then, we must plan. How can he get back home? Poseidon must give up his anger, since he cannot fight alone against the will of all the gods." The opening to the Odyssey by Homer, translated by Emily Wilson. It is the classic of heroism, of human foibles, adventure, and some darn scary moments in Western literature. This Odyssey, translated by Emily Wilson, is this year's big read for the Purdue campus and the greater Lafayette community. It's a story that predates written language. For so very, very long, the stories of Odysseus and his family, of his travels, were related around evening fireplaces by storytellers who crafted the individual chapters for their times and for cultural remembering. How often did the characters change names, change titles, change locations? We'll never know. But it is likely that the central character, Odysseus, and the gods with whom he tussles are as old as dirt, as is our hero's quest to return home, to rejoin his family, reclaim his estates. Only to find that when he does finally make it home, chaos is bubbling in his long-anticipated homeland. In the revenge Odysseus plots and finally takes upon the schemers and traitors to him and his family seem as old as humankind, too. But before a gruesome justice can be wrought, Odysseus must travel the known Mediterranean world, sailing the wine-dark seas in his heroic efforts to return to home and hearth. On every page of this quest, Odysseus and his band encounter islands filled with one-eyed monsters, alluring femme fatales, and always must deal with the finicky whimsy of the Greek gods who meddle in human affairs from their home on Mount Olympus. That's the storyline we've all come to know from our first taste of the Odyssey in grade school or high school or maybe college, a story that wraps itself inside our psyche and follows us through life as much as any we'll ever read or hear or see. And you're quite fair to ask why we have yet another translation of this ancient tale. Don't we already have several modern translations that librarians and teachers are likely to recommend? Well, yes, yes, we do. But we don't have a translation of this epic tale, until today's book was published, a translation produced by a classic scholar who seeks to give a feminine interpretation to this series of heroic tales. And before you begin to accuse me and other reviewers of sexism or worse by offering that point of view, give me a moment to expand my case. Reviewers, in addition to myself, have noted this welcome difference with this translation of the Odyssey, and I found myself wondering, yes, if what we do know of ancient Greek society was true for the many centuries before the Odyssey was finally and first written down, it is likely that women were unlikely to have been in the same rooms, helping to guide the tales as they were told around those ancient fires. They were surrounded by men only. Yet it is just as likely that women, who do play significant roles throughout the story, had their own spins to offer on the stories told. It's not hard to imagine a woman telling the tales and playing up the goofiness of Odysseus, for instance, and playing up as well the stolid, focused, family-centered decades of holding hearth and home by Odysseus's wife Penelope, the wife he left at home for so long, a woman of ancient Greece who held together Odysseus's estates in Ithaca, raised their son Telemachus as a single parent, and kept a manor house full of aggressive suitors for her hand in marriage at bay for, as I noted, 20 long years. I read this translation of the Odyssey with that question in mind. Does this actually matter that a feminine interpretation might bring out something new? And I will say it gave me a new insight into how this collection of stories can be read. The characters of Athena, the character of Penelope, Odysseus's wife, and several others really come across as different, startlingly real people in this version. The Odyssey is poetry, and for some, that alone will be off-putting. But as you read Emily Wilson's beautiful translation, and I hope you do read it out loud, I think you'll join me in finding the words here pleasing on the eye and on the tongue. The poetry is translated, she tells us in her introduction, in iambic pentameter, the most familiar rhyming pattern in modern Western literature, making Wilson's translation familiar to the ear and ready to read. As you probably know, I'm fond of encouraging all of us who read poetry to read it out loud, to better catch the cadence, the rhythms, the sound of the words as they roll around and out of our mouths. So I encourage all of us to read this book out loud, as Wilson tells us she did when writing it. For months now, our public libraries and the Purdue English Department, in association with our local bookstores, have been encouraging all of us to pick up and read this translation of the Odyssey. Attendance at Odyssey-related programs has been good, and circulation, and I hope sales, of the books have been even better. If your experience of this rousing, insightful, so very human story is an experience you've put off so far, or if it is the result of reading the many fine English translations available in poetic form written in the last century or so, I still hope you'll pluck up your spirits and give Emily Wilson's eye-opening translation a try. I think you'll be happily surprised. Thank you if you've already engaged with this year's Big Read book. And if you've yet to give it a whirl, I hope you'll join your friends, your neighbors. Copies of the book will be available at our local libraries throughout the holiday seasons now coming on. So give yourself a treat and read a bit, or heck, read all of it, of this often riveting series of stories older than the written word. See if the Odyssey's epic characters and human drama pull you in, as it has for thousands and thousands, probably millions, of our fellow humankind for so many, many millennia. I want to finish by reading just a bit more. It truly is difficult to pick this book up and then put it down. It reads so very easily and with so many interesting twists and turns. So let's end with book 19, The Queen and the Beggar. The queen is Penelope, Odysseus's wife. The beggar is Odysseus, who has decided upon his return home to kind of hang back, kind of be unknown to most of the people in the estate, so he can psych out what is actually happening, what has happened for the past 20 years. He does reveal his true identity to his son, to Telemachus, and he also has along with him the goddess Athena, who appears in human form as a fellow sailor, so that she can be unknown as well as Odysseus. Our story opens with this. Odysseus was left there in the hall, and with Athena, he was hatching plans for how to kill the suitors. Words flew fast. Telemachus, we have to get the weapons and hide them. When the suitors see them gone and question you, come up with good excuses. You can explain the suit had damaged them. When King Odysseus marched off to Troy, their metal gleamed. Now they are growing dull. I put them safe away from all that smoke. Some spirit also warned me if you drink too much and argue, you could hurt each other, dishonoring your banquet and your courtship. Weapons themselves can tempt a man to fight. Telemachus obeyed his father's word. He summoned the old nurse, and he told her, shut up the women in their rooms while I carried my father's weapons to the storeroom. They have got dirty since my father left, and I was just a little boy. I'm going to keep them safe, protected from the smoke. The loving nurse said, child, I wish you could take charge of all the household management and guard the wealth. Which girl should bring the torch? You said the slaves were not allowed to walk in front of you. He said, this stranger will. A man who eats my bread must work for me, even if he has come from far away. She made no answer, but locked up the doors and led inside the hall. Odysseus and this bright boy jumped up and got the helmets and studded shields and pointed spears. Athena stood by them with a golden lamp. She made majestic light. Telemachus said, father, my eyes have noticed something very strange. The palace walls, the handsome fir wood rafters and crossbeams and pillars high above are visible as if a fire were lit. Some god from heaven must be in the house. But cautiously Odysseus replied, hush. No more questions. Discipline your thoughts. This is the way of gods from Mount Olympus. You need to go to bed. I will stay here to aggravate the slave girls and your mother and make her cry and let her question me. Telemachus went through the hall, lit up by blazing torches, to his room. Sleep came, and there he lay till dawn. Odysseus stayed in the hall, still plotting with Athena how to destroy the suitors. Then the queen, her wits about her, came down from her room, like Artemis or golden Aphrodite. Slaves pulled her usual chair beside the fire. It was inlaid with whorls of ivory and silver, crafted by Icmalius, who had attached a footstool all in one. A great fleece was laid across the chair, and pensively Penelope sat down. The white-armed slave girls came and cleared away the piles of bread, the tables, and the cups from which the arrogant suitors had been drinking. They threw the embers from the braziers onto the floor and heaped fresh wood inside them for light and warmth. And then Melantho scolded Odysseus again. Hey, stranger, will you keep causing trouble roaming around our house at night and spying on us women here? Get out, you tramp. Be happy with your meal, or you will soon get pelted with a torch. Be off. Odysseus began to scowl and made a calculated speech. Insane! You silly girl, why are you mad at me? Because I'm all dirty, dressed in rags and begging through the town? I have no choice. That is how homeless people have to live. I used to have a house, and I was rich, respectable, and often gave to beggars. I helped whoever came, no matter what. I had a lot of slave girls, too, and all the things we count as wealth. The happy life. Zeus ruined it. He must have wanted to. Girl, may you never lose the rank you have among the other slave girls. If your mistress gets angry or Odysseus arrives, it might still happen. But if he is dead and never coming back, his son is now a man. Praise be Apollo. He will notice any misconduct from the women here. He is a grown-up now. Penelope had listened warily, and now she spoke to scold the slave. You brazen, shameless dog, I see you. You will wipe away your nerve, your grand audacity with your own life. You knew quite well, I told you so myself, that I might keep the stranger in the hall to question him about my missing husband. I am weighed down with grief. And then she turned to Eurynome. Bring out a chair and put a cushion on it so the stranger can sit and talk with me. I want to ask him some questions. And so it goes. Penelope questions her husband, whom she still does not recognize, whom she still thinks is a beggar. And just a little bit further into our story, she realizes to whom she is actually speaking. The two of them unite. It's a wonderful moment of happiness between the two of them as husband and wife reunite after some 20 years of absence. Our story continues for several more chapters, but the greatness of the Odyssey lives on for millennia still. The Odyssey by Homer, translated in this beautiful, very readable, exciting new translation by Emily Wilson. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, naturally, the West Lafayette Public Library.